Governor Branstad has made education reform one of his top priorities. What would better schools look like under the governor's plan? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Joyce Russell. We're going to walk through the governor's education plan today with his top education advisor, Linda Fandel. It includes a new system for promoting and compensating teachers and new incentives to attract Iowa's best and brightest into the profession. Also, how does the governor plan to pursue his other priorities this legislative session? He'll tell us in the second half of the show. Join our conversation after the news. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Joyce Russell here in the Law Library at the Iowa State Capitol. Governor Branstad's Special Assistant for Education, Linda Fandel, is our guest this first half hour. As the legislative session continues, we'll be bringing on teachers, school administrators, and others to get their reactions. Today, we'll be doing what legislators are doing this week, and that's learning what's in the governor's education reform bill. Do Iowa schools need a major revamp? Join us with your questions and comments at 866-780-9100. Email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org or post your questions on IPR's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Hello, Linda Fandel. Thank you so much for joining us on River to River today.
Good afternoon, Joyce. It's great to be with you.
Okay. Well, let's talk first about the proposed system for promoting teachers. I'm going to describe to you how I see this, and you tell me if I'm in the ballpark.
Okay.
Teachers would move from beginning teachers to career teachers, then model teachers, mentor teachers, and lead teachers. And as they went up the path, they would work more days and get more pay, but spend less time in the classroom as they move up. Is that the general idea?
Close, not quite, but you've got the roles right. The goal of the governor and lieutenant governor's education reform plan is to assure great teaching in every classroom to improve student achievement, and it's got the big added side benefit of increasing respect for the teaching profession. Not all teachers will end up in the lead teacher roles of model, mentor, and lead teacher, but they'll all have the opportunity to apply for those roles and to really spread teaching expertise across whole school buildings.
Okay. Well, would this take the, as teachers move up into these different roles, and as I said, spend less time in the classroom, would this take the place of promotions and raises that teachers get now for, say, getting an advanced degree or specialized training?
No, the proposed teacher leadership roles would be in addition to the traditional salary schedule that's already in place. School districts could certainly change that if they wanted, but I'd anticipate that many districts will keep the traditional salary schedule they've got now and then pay teacher leaders the stipends in addition to what they regularly earn.
Okay, so that way you sort of bypass this getting involved in collective bargaining. Is that one advantage?
Not at all. The teacher leadership structure will be a locally bargained issue. It's a state framework, starts with the initial or beginning teacher, as you said, goes to the career teacher, and then teachers who apply to be model, mentor, or lead teachers who are going to open their classrooms to other teachers to observe them or who are going to provide mentoring and coaching and co-teaching. Those roles will, the proposal requires that at least 10% of teachers become model teachers, at least 10% become mentor teachers, and at least 5% become lead teachers. And there are minimum stipends of $2,000, $5,000, and $10,000 as teachers move up the career ladder. But local school districts and their teachers' unions can bargain to have a larger share of teachers become model, mentor, or lead teachers. They can also bargain a larger stipend, for example.
Okay. Well, Linda Fandel, is this making teachers jump through more hoops in order to be better paid? Are you hearing that criticism at all?
No, actually, we haven't heard that criticism. What this is about is using the talents of many of our outstanding teachers to help improve instruction across the building. We're asking teachers to do increasingly complex work because we have higher expectations for all students today. So what the governor and lieutenant governor are proposing is to use teacher leadership along with principal leadership to provide stronger instructional leadership across the whole school building.
And in the past, that kind of work, at least formally, as far as mentoring teachers and bringing them along, in the past, that's really been the principal's job, right?
No, the role of instructional leader in a school building has largely been left to the principal, but we have in Iowa for a long time used mentor teachers to mentor brand new teachers. What's different about the governor and lieutenant governor's proposal in this case when it comes to mentors is that mentor teachers will have a larger role. They'll have more time to spend mentoring new teachers as well as veteran teachers who want additional help. And then the model mentor and lead teachers in a school building will work with the principal and any other administrative staff to strengthen instructional strategies across the whole building.
Okay. Well, we heard in a sort of opening meeting on the bill last week, I got the impression that you've just said teachers are already mentoring other teachers. But I got the impression that there's quite a lot of this going on in schools where really good teachers sort of emerge as leaders, as mentors, and so forth. And so this would formalize that and also compensate them better.
Yes,
Is that correct?
That's correct. We have mentor teachers who receive a small stipend now. This would create at least a $5,000 a year stipend for mentor teachers. We also have a lot of teachers, as you noted, Joyce, who are in leadership roles in school buildings, but they may not be getting compensated for those roles. So this formalizes the teacher leadership roles to help, analyze data, improve instructional strategies, coach and co-teach to really strengthen, instruction in every classroom. And it isn't just about lead teachers providing leadership, but it's also about all teachers having the opportunity to collaborate together in a way they don't now inside the school day in their own classrooms.
Well, along the way, I've heard concerns about the fact that teachers who have the most experience are sort of the cream of the crop. They're going to end up having less instructional time with students. Is that a legitimate concern?
I think it's a misunderstanding because this idea, the proposal is relatively new in some ways. The mentor teachers will teach about 75% of the time in their own classroom. Lead teachers will teach about 50% of the time in their own classroom. But the rest of the time, they will largely be out in other classrooms co-teaching and coaching. So they'll be spreading their expertise as top teachers across the whole building and strengthening great teaching in every classroom.
Okay, so technically then the idea that you would be taking your best teachers out of the classroom isn't exactly true then, I guess, from what you're saying. They might leave their own classroom and have to be covered for being out of their own classroom, but they would be in other classrooms and that you would be promoting excellence in teaching in that way.
Exactly. A good deal of the time they'll be in other classrooms working with other teachers and with other students.
And they have to work more days. Tell us what that would look like. I mean, what would
sure.
they do on this when they're like staying after everybody else has gone home for the summer or whatever? What would they be doing?
Yeah, the additional days come into play in a couple of different places. Initial teachers, beginning teachers in their first 2 years, would work 5 extra days. Model teachers, the teachers who open their classrooms to other teachers to observe, work an extra 5 days, mentor teachers an extra 10 days, and lead teachers an extra 15 days. And that additional time is all around strengthening instruction in the classroom. So they'll work on professional development related to strengthening the quality of instruction. The goal here is to better identify the needs of individual students and then meet those needs.
Well, Linda Fandel, tell us about how widely adopted this kind of system has been in school districts around the country. We know that Iowa passed something similar more than 10 years ago, but it was never funded. In the meantime, are more and more school districts doing this?
Yes, as you noted earlier, Joyce, there are Iowa school districts that already have elements of the of teacher leadership. They have instructional coaches. Waterloo has instructional coaches. Des Moines has instructional coaches. Des Moines also has school improvement leaders. And many other districts put teachers into teacher leadership roles and use their expertise. What the governor and lieutenant governor are aiming to do is create a whole system transformation across the entire state in every school building to really make the most of teacher expertise in instructional leadership. There are, outside of Iowa, probably the best-known program with these teacher leadership roles is a Millikan Foundation program called the Teacher and Student Advancement Program, which is in a number of states. And the governor and lieutenant governor's proposal is significantly modeled after the TAP program.
Mm-hmm. But still, would you say a relatively few number of schools are doing this? This is still sort of avant-garde?
I wouldn't say it's avant-garde. High-performing school systems around the world deploy teacher leadership to really strengthen instruction. When I visited Singapore a little over a year ago, I saw it there. I saw it in Finland. I saw it in Alberta when I visited there several years ago in Canada. So different school districts know they need to make the most of teacher leadership alongside principal leadership to strengthen instruction.
Mm-hmm. Well, At the meeting the other day, Director Glass said he said something to the effect that the governor's bill turns professional development on its ear. This is really about professional development for teachers. I was struck by that because I've noted over the years that teachers in the legislature have very strong ideas about professional development, what works and what doesn't. And it just makes me wonder how hard a sell this is going to be.
I think that teachers will find this very appealing because it uses teacher leadership inside the classroom that's geared toward helping improve instruction in every classroom. For too long, we've had teacher leadership that takes the teachers to the auditorium to listen to a great speaker, but they go back to their classroom, and it's hard to translate that into improving instruction. What we're trying to accomplish with this proposal is giving teachers more support in the classroom from their colleagues to help improve instruction in that classroom.
And another concern that's being raised is how this would work in the very smallest districts where you have one math teacher in the high school. There aren't that many of those really small school districts left, but where maybe you have only one math teacher. How is that going to work for that teacher to leave the classroom and go mentor other teachers?
Smaller school districts will want to look both at collaborating with other school districts as well as with area education agencies. We know there are some challenges unique to smaller school districts. So the governor and lieutenant governor's bill has a $500,000 technical assistance fund that's aimed at helping districts with 600 or fewer students. But we also know this can work in small school districts. The TAP program that I mentioned earlier has seen it work in small school districts. And the Department of Education here in Iowa went out and modeled this proposal with large, medium, and small-sized school districts as we were putting it together.
Well, we'd like for you to join the conversation if you'd like to at 866-780-9100. What do you think schools need to improve teaching and student learning? You can also email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to move on to another big part of the education reform bill, and that is attracting more top students into teaching. Tell us about the marketing campaign that's going to kick that off.
Thanks, Joyce. It really starts with raising the beginning teacher salary, which is now the statewide minimum now is $28,000 a year. This proposal would raise it to $35,000 a year, so a 25% increase. The marketing campaign involves creating a new Teach Iowa Scholar program that would appeal to top college students, to go into teaching, and if they're selected for the program and they teach in Iowa schools for 5 years after graduation, they could earn up to $20,000 as a Teach Iowa Scholar Award, either to pay back their student loans or just as a direct award.
Okay, so besides just the extra money for moving up the career ladder, there's more money there in that part of it. Also, some special attention to new teachers. Tell us about that.
Sure. The first year as a teacher, as an initial teacher, is called a residency year. So as a first-year teacher, you would have a teaching load of about 75%. You teach about three-quarters of the time. The other quarter of the time, you'll observe teachers who are outstanding teachers in their classroom, watch best practices, work with your mentor teacher, and really have an opportunity to learn more about teaching in that first year rather than being overwhelmed by being a teacher in that first year.
How big of a problem is it of teachers just sort of not surviving the first couple of years?
I think most teachers survive it, but virtually every teacher I've ever talked to said the first year really was overwhelming. There's just not enough support for new teachers because they have so much to learn in that first year. That's also why the governor and lieutenant governor have proposed in this package a pilot program that would take the, right now there's a current typically one semester of student teaching in future teachers' senior year of college. The governor and lieutenant governor would like to try a pilot program where in the senior year of college, students teach for a full year. That's being done at Arizona State University now with a lot of success, and teachers come out pretty much like second-year teachers instead of first-year teachers.
Okay, well, we've got a caller on the line. Stanley is with us from Fayette. Good morning, Stanley. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I really think the schools need to take the distraction out of the learning, and I think one of the big distractors is having sports programs within the school. I think the sports programs should be separate from the school and funded by something else other than district money. I see teachers that coaches, and they're also teaching a class, and they'll spend 30 minutes on talking about the football game from Friday night and the other 20 minutes with classroom lore. And I really think the sports are a big distractor in the schools.
I think Stanley's question is really about the issue of how much instructional time there is. There doesn't seem to be anything in the governor's program this year to address boosting instructional time. Linda Fandel?
The focus of the governor and lieutenant governor's proposal is on ensuring great teaching in every classroom. We know that inside the school, nothing matters more than the quality of teaching in the classroom, and that's why they are focusing this proposal on increasing the quality of teaching and instruction in every classroom. There are many other things that could be looked at to improve instruction, but I think the right first place to start is really better supporting great teaching in every classroom.
Linda Fandel, another part of the plan has to do with evaluating teachers' performance, including taking student performance into account, all the way to possibly taking student test scores into account when teachers' performance is evaluated. This has been controversial in the past. It remains controversial today. The governor's plan will have a commission make recommendations on that. Is that kicking the can down the road? Is that something that's just too difficult to get through the legislature?
We're hopeful the legislature will approve a process by which, you know, a commission looks at how to improve teacher evaluations, including how much student achievement growth should count. We need to improve the quality of teacher and administrator evaluations in the state. It's time to update them. We also need to do this to get to hopefully get the federal No Child Left Behind waiver, which we applied for last year and did not receive.
Mm-hmm. Eventually the legislature would have to approve it, right, if they came up with a recommendation to include, say, student test scores?
Not under the bill language. The commission working with the director of the Department of Education would work to improve evaluations and figure out how much student achievement growth should count in evaluations.
And then the director could approve that without the legislature signing on?
Well, if the legislature moves forward with this language in the bill.
Okay. Something else, we're quickly running out of time, but another part of the bill is called Iowa Promise Diploma Seals. Students would take tests and prepare portfolios to indicate excellence above and beyond just a high school diploma. What's the objective there?
The objective there is to help all students focus on whether they plan to go to college or to pursue career training after high school, but we want everyone to look at one or the other, or maybe both, but we want students to really focus on the future. We want to better connect what they study in high school to the real-world careers they may want to pursue, so we want to help both schools and students and their families focus on what they need to do to be ready.
Last year, there was a discussion of exit exams that students would have to take in order to get a high school diploma. Does this sort of take the place of that, which also proved to be too controversial?
It's still possible that exit exams may become part of the career or college-ready diploma seals. These would be seals students would choose to earn, opt to earn, in addition to a local high school diploma. But end-of-course exams right now are not written into the legislation.
Okay. Here's another quick question as our
sure.
time is running out. It seems to me you're just creating an artificial hierarchy amongst the teachers, trying to motivate current teachers to strive to meet that next goal to get the next title. Do you really think this will work if their main motivation is to get a new title and get more money instead of helping students and being truly high-quality teachers?
I think teachers' main motivation now, and I think it will be very much the motivation with the career ladder, is to really share their expertise to improve instruction. The problem now is that teachers don't have enough opportunity to do that, and the governor and lieutenant governor's proposal would provide that. You know, Iowa used to lead the nation in education. We now rank in the middle of the pack on national tests. There are a lot of other indications that we're not serving students as well as we need to, The teacher career pathways will help us serve students with really strong instruction in every classroom.
And that question was an email from Tracy in Des Moines. Well, we're just about out of time. Linda Fandel, we're so grateful that you came on and filled us in on the details of this. I know we're just really getting started on it, and we'll be hearing about it a lot more. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity, Joyce. I'd love to come back and talk more about the proposal.
Okay, very good. Coming up in the next half hour, Governor Branstad will be joining us to talk about his priorities for the year. You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Joyce Russell in the Law Library at the State Capitol. In his condition of the state speech this year, Governor Branstad named three priorities for the year: education reform, property tax reductions, and health care. He's joining us now on River to River to talk about those. Are Iowa schools in need of comprehensive reform? Give us a call at 866-780-9100 to join the conversation. Post your questions on IPR's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Governor Branstad. Thank you so much for joining us on River to River today.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you today.
How important is it to you that Iowa adopt some of these broad-based systemic changes to the state's education system? Will you judge the success of your latest tenure in office by this?
This is one of the reasons why I came back and ran for governor again, because historically, Iowa has been a leader in educational achievement. Back in 1992, when the NAEP test came out, we led the nation in student achievement. Most recently, we've fallen to 25th. Massachusetts leads the country. A lot of other states have passed significant education reforms, standards, and aligned assessments with it, and made significant changes. Iowa has been complacent too long. And even though we put more money into education, in 1992 it was 37% of the general budget of the state. It's now up to 43% of the general fund of the state. We need to really focus on things that are going to improve student achievement, and that is attracting top-notch teachers and then encouraging and rewarding them to take on leadership roles in the schools, because a quality teacher in the classroom is the best thing we can do for improving the achievement of our students. And I think that this is one of the most important things, and we have a very focused agenda, as you mentioned at the onset, basically education reform, property tax reduction, and our goal to be the healthiest state. That's my focus, and I would consider this to be a successful session if we finally pass comprehensive education reform. We've been working on this for 2 years. We had Arne Duncan, the U.S. Secretary of Education, come here for the Education Summit. We had a teacher and leadership teacher and principal leadership symposium at Drake University this past summer. We've had a task force that's worked on this whole teacher leadership and compensation, which had broad representation from all parts of education. And this has been endorsed by the business community, the Iowa Business Council, the Association of Business and Industry, the Chamber Alliance, and the Greater Des Moines Partnership have all endorsed this specific systemic reform of education. I think the public the subcommittee meeting that the House Education Committee had the other night on this, where a number of the task force members spoke, I thought was also very helpful. I'm very optimistic. I think that this is on a fast track. We want to see this done early this session.
Well, we just spent the last half hour talking in most detail about the...
I listened. Okay. Linda Fennell, my education assistant. And that's one of the reasons why I chose Jason Glass and Linda Fennell, because they're a great team. They both have a real passion for this subject. They've done a lot of research and have a great background. And they've helped us put together this comprehensive plan. Plus, we've worked very hard. The Lieutenant Governor and I have been all over the state. We've had town hall meetings. We've listened to professional educators and for parents and others. And I really think we have a plan that makes a lot of sense. And we understand the legislature will make some changes to it, but we hope we can perfect it and improve it as it goes and approve it this year.
Well, the proposal that we've been talking about, the system of promoting teachers to leadership roles, I feel like it has the potential for changing the whole teaching culture in a school.
Yes.
And I'm wondering about teachers' acceptance of it. Let me rephrase that a little bit differently. There were some last year who read some of your education reform proposals as teacher bashing, blaming everything on the teachers.
You've never heard me say anything nasty about a teacher, because I love the teachers that I had. I've talked many times about Lyra Seawick, who was the teacher that I had in eighth grade, taught us the 3 R's of good government. She's the one that inspired me to go into a career of public service. So, and I have a daughter that's a third grade teacher. The Lieutenant Governor has a daughter that's a first grade teacher. And so, we were very sensitive to the criticism made by some last year. We've tried to listen to their concerns, the concern about not taking our best teachers out of the classroom, but actually having them be mentors and in other classrooms and helping us improve the quality of the entire teaching profession and providing young teachers that are really talented an opportunity to move into a leadership position earlier and to be recognized and rewarded for that. So our whole program is really focused on not criticize. In fact, I said in the State of the State, it's not the fault of our teachers that are stuck in a 20th century system. We need to reform our education system to really meet the needs of the 21st century, recognize that students learn in different ways, and we can't just have one teacher lecturing to these kids, but we really need to have a way that can motivate and encourage them all to achieve at the highest level possible.
We have some callers interested in education reform. Dave is on the line from Muscatine. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Go ahead with your question for Governor Branstad.
Well, I want to applaud the governor for the initiative that he's taking in to improve the education in Iowa, but I think he's going to run into a problem with school boards. I live in Muscatine, and in recent years, the Muscatine School Board has been forcing some of the best teachers, because they're the oldest and the highest paid, to take early retirement. And they come out full face and tell them, you cost us too much. Now, somehow we're going to have to get over this. I'm thinking of one particular teacher who is probably the best elementary school science teacher in the Muscatine system. And he was forced to retire. and he wasn't happy about retiring because he was a long ways from being ready to retire.
Well, I guess, Mike, I would be concerned if that's the case, because I think we ought to be trying to keep our best teachers in the classroom. Part of the problem is our old system, which is, you know, basically rewarded seniority, is that people that have been there a long time are extremely well paid compared to the new teachers. We're trying to make it more attractive for high achievers to go into teaching, but we certainly don't want to lose our best experienced teachers. In fact, under this new system, they could be lead teachers or master teachers and play a role in helping improve the qualities of some of the new teachers that are coming in. So we provide additional funding for that, and I hope the school boards will recognize this is a way we can improve education. It's not just about doing it in the most economical way. It's about improving educational achievement so our students are prepared for the jobs of the future, and a lot of those jobs of the future require really critical thinking skills plus good communications and certainly knowing math and science and subjects like that.
Governor, during the summer discussions and the task forces, the question of class sizes came up, and there was an opinion thrown about that this approach could result in higher class sizes. There was even the opinion thrown about that this is more important than class size, and there was a lot of reaction against, predictable reaction against that. And Jason Glass at the meeting last week said there's nothing in here that would force class sizes to get bigger. However, I noticed in your budget that the early intervention block grant program that pays for class size reduction goes away. So why shouldn't we be worried about class sizes going up?
Well, what we're doing is replacing it with this new program, which is really focusing more on preparing kids. I guess just smaller class sizes doesn't necessarily get you higher student achievement. Many of our small schools in Iowa don't have the achievement that some of the schools that have larger class sizes. So I think the studies have shown that class size in and of itself is not the total answer. And we have some schools that have extremely small classes because of declining enrollment, but they're not able to provide a quality program, and the teachers are beginning at the very lowest pay level. So having a more attractive salary system that's going to attract high achievers to teaching, and then also being able to have others that serve as mentors that help, I think will do more good than just focusing on class size. And while we have focused on class size, other states have focused on quality in improving their education, and that's what we're trying to do, is really kind of change the culture, recognizing that, you know, you don't want to have too big a class size, but the most important thing is you want to have a great teacher in the classroom motivating the students to achieve at the highest level possible.
We're going to move on now to talking about the governor's property tax reduction ideas. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Do you agree property taxes should be lowered? Are your property taxes too high? You can also post a question at, or get, email us a question at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, Governor, I'm going to very briefly describe your plan, and you tell me if I'm close. You would gradually reduce the value of commercial property that is taxed so that it's down to 80% of the assessed value. In the future, for all four classes of property, that's agriculture, residential, commercial, and industrial, none of these four classes may grow faster in taxable value than the others, and that taxable value can't go up each year by more than 2%. Is that in a nutshell?
Well, that's it, but there's more to it. We also fully fund the homestead tax credit, which hasn't been fully funded in many years. We fully fund the disabled and elderly and disabled tax credit. So last year we put $33 million into those, and then we add another $33 million into that. We also tie all classes together so there can't be a shift from one to another. And we fully fund the reimbursement to local governments. So the total reduction in property tax is nearly $400 million over a four-year period. And it totally protects local governments because they get the growth from new residential and agriculture, as well as the state reimbursing the reduction as we reduce the commercial and industrial property tax 5% a year for the next 4 years.
Well, you said that it doesn't shift the burden to other tax payers like homeowners. There's a major Democratic objection to that, and they still disagree with that. And
they haven't read the bill.
Well, let me tell you what the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency says. They say if you take two major components of your plan, reducing commercial property taxes and limiting taxable valuation by 2%, it depends on how those two things interact in order to determine whether residential ends up getting more of the burden. So in other words, they interpret that to mean hard to say, but they certainly don't come right out and say it won't shift.
Well, here's what happens if we don't do anything. Under our present law, you know residential is tied to agriculture, right?
Right.
Okay. You know what's been happening with farmland, with commodity prices for agriculture products? Corn and soybeans 5 years ago, $3 for corn, $6 for soybeans. Now we've had much higher prices on those. And so if you look at last year and this coming year and every year, we're going to see agriculture go up by 4% and residential's tied to it, so it goes up for 4%. So my proposal limits it to 2%. Then it fully funds what hasn't been done for many years, and that is the homestead tax credit. That's the reason why we feel confident to say residential taxes will go down. And the big increase, if you do nothing, is on residential because it's the biggest class of property. Over the next year, next 8 years, it'll go up by over $1 billion. So that's the reason why we need to do this, to protect residential as well as reduce commercial from being third highest in the nation. We're 16th highest in residential right now. So we need to reduce commercial, industrial, residential, and also agricultural, and protect all of our tax. I can tell you that the most unfair tax in this state is the property tax, and you can do any poll on that. You can say sales tax, income tax, property tax. Property tax is the most unfair because it hits people that oftentimes can't afford it. People on fixed income, elderly people, and it hits everybody that owns property. And even people that don't own property that are renting property on a net lease, a lot of your startup businesses, they are just whacked by this high commercial property tax. And that's why one of the reasons why Iowa has not fared as well in startup businesses in the past.
Okay, well, you would pay for this property tax changes by using the surplus that we currently have over the next several years, and we have a question about that. Brett writes, why give away the surplus of the state in tax breaks when Iowa and the U.S. are coming out of a recession? The Iowa budget has been cut enough. Where are you going to make up the difference? How will any infrastructure be paid for?
Well, first of all, infrastructure is paid for out of a different fund. So that's not paid out of the general fund. We have a special fund, and gambling money goes for that. We also have, for road infrastructure, the road use tax fund. So infrastructure is paid for out of a whole different pot of money. With regard to the general fund, we are looking at investing significantly in reforming and improving education and reducing property tax. And I believe that is an appropriate use of this money that we have. And why do we have a surplus when other states have deficits? Because we've had good fiscal management. We've stopped some of the abuses of the past, the use of one-time money for ongoing expenses. We have reduced the size and cost of state government. We're down over 800 employees. And so we're managing things in a much better, more efficient way. I would also say I think we're more transparent and we're providing better services at less cost.
Well, moving on to health care, your proposals for making Iowa the healthiest state in the nation include recruiting more doctors and limiting malpractice judgments. And there are a lot of people saying what you really need to do is bring more people onto the Medicaid rolls.
We've already done that.
And you answered that question this morning. You said that we've brought more and more people onto Medicaid and the state's health has gotten worse.
Right.
So you've made your point there. And a caller,
we've got to get people to take ownership of their own health, make good decisions, not use tobacco products, nutrition, exercise, and all those kinds of things. And yes, we do want to, and I've been involved with the Free Clinics of Iowa and other outreach programs to try to provide better health care. We need to have more doctors, especially in our rural areas, in healthcare professionals at Des Moines University. We did a lot to try to train doctors to be leaders in their communities. We just need to keep more of them here.
Okay. And that question came from Weldon in Ridgeway. He wanted to know why you oppose bringing more people onto Medicaid. But I'm going to ask you that in a different way. Is there ever a point where you bring more people onto Medicaid because these families are enduring life without health insurance? It's just the humane thing to do.
Well, we've already done that. As I say, when I was governor before, we had 250,000 people on Medicaid. We're now up to 400,000. And we've done a lot also to try to reach out to children who don't have health coverage. But we also think we need to do this in a partnership way. The big problem with Medicaid, it's a big federal program, and there are not the incentives to encourage people to take ownership of their own health. And that's why at Des Moines University, we learned if we can get people to do health risk assessments, identify their own risk factors, and then work on reducing those, then I think the state can partner with them. I understand the concerns the hospital association have. Because they cut a deal with the Obama administration and took a massive reduction in their reimbursement for hospitals. That's because of the Obamacare. Now, they need to fix that the same way they did the doctor fix. Remember the doctor fix? Every year it's been a shortfall and whatever, and they didn't provide enough reimbursement for doctors. Well, guess what happened in the fiscal cliff thing? They put a permanent fix in for that. But what's that going to do? It's going to cost the federal government a whole lot more money. And that's the whole thing that's going to happen with their, when they passed Obamacare, they didn't fund it. They pretended they were by cutting Medicare reimbursement. Now, Medicare reimbursement is what they need to address at the national level. And part of it was this. They were said, oh, what you lose in Medicare reimbursement, you're going to pick up in Medicaid because we're going to mandate the states expand it. But remember, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't force the states to do this. So now I understand why they'd like to shift that burden to us. But the taxpayers of the state of Iowa, our biggest concern is if we buy into the federal program, then we have a maintenance of effort requirement, and it's unaffordable and unsustainable. We think the federal government needs to solve the problem they created.
Well, you mentioned the Iowa Hospital Association. They're running ads.
Oh, absolutely. I know. They cut a bad deal. I understand. Okay. They're getting killed by the federal government on their Medicare reimbursement. They're trying to pick it up back up at the state level. We're saying they need to go to Washington, get this thing solved at Washington, D.C., not on the backs of the Iowa taxpayer.
Okay. There's potential for this to become an issue in the next governor's race. There's Democratic legislators who are saying this. Sort of drawing a line in the sand on this. I know you haven't said you're going to run for governor yet, but can you win on this issue?
Well, first and foremost, I think people appreciate a governor that's honest and tells them the truth about a federal program that's unaffordable and unsustainable. I've always done that. When I was governor before, we controlled Medicaid and we provided services. Indeed, when I was elected again in 2010, there was a $550 million shortfall in Medicaid because they'd use one-time money for ongoing expenses. And I asked Chuck Palmer to come back to run the Department of Human Services, and we have addressed that. And we are, in fact, this year alone, the state is picking up $57 million more in state dollars to pay for Medicaid, because the federal government is reducing our share due to the fact that we have a stronger economy and we've done better than other states. I know this system and I know the unfairness of it. The unfairness is what Washington, D.C. has done in the reimbursement to Iowans through the Medicare program. Our reimbursement is among the lowest in the country. The Congress of the United States needs to turn this around. They need to correct this unfairness. And the Hospital Association, unfortunately, I think made a bad deal, and I feel bad for them, but I think they need to get it corrected in Washington.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but you've made clear you're not interested in serving in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
But you must be happy that there's a new window for your party to possibly win a U.S. Senate seat, right?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. It's a wide-open situation.
All right, Governor, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Julie Englander, Caitlin Fry, and John Pimble. I'm Joyce Russell. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.